This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
No cause for concern whatsoever. Dak's going to be fine.
Mike McCarthy said it was a fatigue injury.
I think it's just something, as we said, it's just taking the precaution.
I don't think it seems a serious situation at the moment.
This is early in training camp. No cause for concern.
Sounds a lot like Leslie Nielsen, you know? Nothing to see here. Everybody keep moving along. It is Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Carlin, Bart Scott with you this afternoon at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. We're going to go there early and often today because we start with football. There is actual preseason football tonight, and that leads us into some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And we have got the Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Steelers in the Hall of Fame game in Canton. We're not going to see Dak Prescott tonight. We're not going to see Ben Roethlisberger, but just the mere fact that we have some football gives us a chance to talk about the prospects of two teams that are always kind of that are national teams that people care about everywhere. And Bart, you know, to start with the Cowboys, I've been really pouring through it the last few days. I've really looked through all of what the Cowboys are supposed to be this year, talking about their roster and how it's improved, talking about their defense, talking about Dan Quinn, all these kinds of things. And I'm still trying to build the case, and I can't. I'm trying to build the case for the Cowboys to find a way in a bad division to really find a way to step up and take control of it. And I just don't see it. And frankly, I'm not the only one.
See, the thing is, I believe that they have made some necessary improvements. I think they'll be a much better team. But where me and you differ is I think that the division is pretty solid. I think it's three teams deep, and I don't think those teams are just equally yoked. So, okay, they're going to be good with, you know, playing each other. I think they can beat some teams out of the conference. I mean, I'm a true believer that defense wins championships, but they also win games on the way to a championship. So I look at the Washington football team, and I think they're going to be solid. I think that people are really underestimating what the Giants have become and what they've put together. You know, on the defensive side of the ball, I think they just got even better with adding guys like Ozeez. And then I get to the Dallas Cowboys, who I think are the least balanced team in the division. But what they do exceptionally well. You know, you talk about what Dak Prescott was doing before the injury. You know, Tyron Smith gets hurt. Lionel Collins gets hurt. You think about what he was able to do, the amount of yards he was able to put up against the number one team in the league, number one defense last year in the Rams, what he was able to do in Seattle, what he was able to do early on and what his averages were. I think he was leading the league in scoring and in passing even 3 to 4 weeks after he had got injured. But the Dallas is a train wreck that we always know. They'll find a way to screw it up. And until they change that narrative, they're going to have to wear that scarlet letter because, you know, they just haven't lived up to expectations. We've been talking about this every single year since I've been in the league, left the league. They haven't been relevant or haven't done anything or been a true title contender since 1996.
Well, to nobody's your point,
taking
though.
Nobody's taking them serious.
And they're not. You're right. I mean, to your point, I went on Caesars William Hill this morning to get the full lay of the land in the NFC. The Cowboys, who are the prohibitive favorites in the division at +115,
wow. That's
over. I shouldn't say prohibitive, but you know the next team is Washington at +265. So basically, the Cowboys are even money, and the Washington football team's a little under 3-1 to win the division. But then when you go to win the NFC, the Cowboys are 7th. Yeah. I mean, you've got three teams from the NFC West that have better odds to win entire NFC than Dallas. And that shows to me why there really isn't a whole lot of confidence in what they are. But to your point about scoring, about their ability to score, I have to think, as friendly as the rules are to offenses now, I have to think that going into a season with the idea of just trying to get into a ton of shootouts and win games. Yeah. I don't think that's a good recipe for long-term success this year.
Not at all, especially when your quarterback has fatigue in his shoulder in week one. What the hell does he have fatigue for? What? How many passes could he have thrown from 1 week of training camp?
Yeah.
So that's concern for me, and we talk about the compensation all the time. But, you know, for me, the Dallas Cowboys is just a storyline, but we've known what they are, and that's a lot of hot air. That's what they've been. Like I told you before, because they have the star, because they're one of the most valued franchises, if not the most valued franchise in all of North American sports, then, you know, they get credit because they get talked about all the time. Meanwhile, the other team that we're discrediting, right, like it couldn't be more opposite, right? These are two teams that made their name and made their fame in the 70s, right?
Yep.
It was always either the Steelers and the Cowboys, right? And the Steelers won, you know, the Steel Curtain once won four championships, and then the Dallas Cowboys came and represented in the 90s. They haven't been relevant, but we know what we're going to get on brand with Dallas. Do we not know what we're going to get on brand with the Steelers? But yet we give doubt to them, and we're optimistic about Dallas every year. But we always find a way to try and bury the Steelers. And all they've done under Mike Tomlin is never had a losing season. With Mason Rudolph.
Listen, and that was when they had a better offense.
Dude's looking like radio when they carried him off. He had no face mask on. Looked like he was a stunt double for somebody who act like he looked like a football player.
Well, they don't have listen, Mason Rudolph to me can't play. I don't think he's very good at all. I don't think Dwayne Haskins is very good, and I loved him a couple of years ago coming out, so much so that, like, I'm convinced that I completely put the Maloik on him. And and having said that, Ben Roethlisberger is not nearly as mobile as he used to be. He's just not. And that offensive line, I for the life of me, cannot understand. When you lose Alejandro Villanueva,
yes.
You lose David DeCastro, you decide to cut him.
Yeah.
And Marquise Pouncey retires.
Right.
And those two things happen first before you cut DeCastro.
Nope.
And you've got a rookie now at left guard and Kendrick Green. It's a whole mess on that line. And Bart, I don't see where they're going to be able to protect him enough. Because it wasn't just elusiveness, too. He was always about the big torso, body strength, hard to bring down, right?
Yeah, exactly. He'll make you miss. He had a little shoulder shimmy that you run right by. Little guys, he swat away. But listen.
But he doesn't fight off those hits anymore. He's got a little more Brady in him where he'll duck under and take as little of a hit as he can.
But Chris, this is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I know.
Let me say this again. This is the Pittsburgh Steelers. So if the Pittsburgh Steelers said, you know what, we're better without DeCastro, trust me. They're better without DeCastro. So the fact that they feel comfortable with whoever they're putting in there at guard lets me know that they know something that I don't know. Because guess what? When they lost Alan Faneca, I didn't know Willie Colon.
Mm-hmm.
When they lost Starks, I didn't know Vinny Nuala or whatever the hell his name is. I didn't know them. And you didn't know them either.
No, I didn't.
So what I'm saying is, if we are going to trust and believe and give Dallas the benefit of the doubt, why not give the Pittsburgh Steelers, who was 11-0? Yeah, you can say it was a flawed 11-0, but it was 11-0. You ask me, what am I excited about when I watch this game today? I want to see philosophies and brands collide. I want to see historical, two of the most proud franchises, Dallas with 3, Pittsburgh with 6 titles underneath their franchise. And I want to see the two pieces that are going to signify and potentially be the face of these franchises for the next 5 to 10 years. And that is Michael Parsons, and that is Najee Harris on brand, right? Mm-hmm. Michael Parsons, all flash, right? He's the perfect Dallas Cowboy, all hype. Najee Harris, all grit and blue collar. And I want to see them meet in the hole. You ask me what I'm excited about? I want to see that. I want to see if Parsons will stand on the train tracks when the train is coming through. And I want to see what Najee Harris is made out of. Because one thing I know about Pittsburgh, they say they want to get back to running the football. And that's who they've always been.
Look, when they do that, they are an exceptionally effective team. Like anybody, but particularly them. Because in the years where they have thrown it all over the lot,
yeah,
they have been good, but they haven't been good enough at the end. They haven't been able to seal the deal. Now, I'll say this about Micah Parsons. I talked to somebody right around the draft last year who was on the Penn State staff, mm-hmm, with Micah Parsons there recently, and called him, and this is not somebody that throws around compliments. He throws them around like manhole covers.
Okay.
Called him the best defensive football player he's ever seen.
I need that guy tested.
On his team, like where he's been on the staff and a player's been on the team. He's been coaching a long time.
You know what's funny too? Like if you take the over under, like all the players that graduated from Penn State and that went on and went to the league and got drafted, It's about where you go to.
Yeah.
So is he going to become Bobby Wagner or is he going to become McClain? You know, a guy that was good but was feeling himself too much because he had to star in Dallas and thought he could retire and come back three or four times and realize that the league will move on without you. Or with a kid, a Wu-A, a Wayo, or whatever his name is,
yeah.
Away, become better because he went to the Baltimore Ravens. And the Baltimore Ravens know how to develop and also mold not only the player but also the character of the player.
Well, that's the issue with Parsons. He had some of those character issues before.
Yeah, and he
draft,
went to the wrong place.
But and I understand
that's not a place that you get better if you got character issues.
I'm talking about from that talent standpoint. And again, obviously one person telling you that is not
gospel. But what I'm trying to say is where you go matters too.
Right.
So if you got a guy that feels himself and a guy that's loquacious and thinks he's better and he's God's gift to football and he goes to the Dallas Cowboys, well, guess what? It's just going to make you more what you've already are. Right. But you got a guy like Away that goes to the Baltimore Ravens and they're going to teach him how to have humility and pay his dues and teach him the way that they do things around there. So you
humility
talk about
culture. Humility is not a word I think that exists in Dallas, does it?
That's my point. So let's see if they're able to, you know, because I think all the talent is there, but is all the talent there in Dallas and can they develop him? Not only that, the culture that they have.
That's Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Your expectations for the Cowboys this year, when you hear that they are only the seventh favorite in the NFC, and yet they are favored to win the NFC East. And is Bart right? Are the Steelers being undersold here? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We shift over to the Knicks, who continue to have a busy offseason. Yesterday it was Kemba Walker. And today, it was Julius Randle agreeing to an extension, 4 years, $117 million, and that's tacked on to the end of this coming year where he's making 19.8. So roughly, in total, it's 5 years at 140. Now, you might think that's a great contract for Julius Randle, but keep this in mind. Had he decided to wait until next year, he could have gotten a five-year $201 million contract. So in essence, he is leaving $80 million on the table. Or is he? Because Julius Randle just had his best season by far, really blossomed all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But then he kind of tanked in the postseason. And I know that how much attention they paid to him because he was the Knicks' biggest weapon. But Bart, when all of that is the case.
Yeah.
And Randle decides to take that money. Why is it that there's a little something that bothers me about that with a guy that didn't necessarily want to bet on himself for $80 million more?
Well, because I tell you what, when you look at Julius Randle, he's no longer a spring chicken, even though he's still young in age. He's been in the league 7 years. He's going into his eighth season. It's time to cash in, right? Because I don't know if he believes he can be a better basketball player. He could be.
But doesn't that bother you if he doesn't believe that?
Listen, he may have hit his ceiling, and his ceiling of what he can be is pretty damn good. 24-10 is elite, you know, but he can't be 24-10 now that you add Kemba Walker. He can't be 24-10 when you add Evan Fournier, because guess what? These are other shots that they're going to get. They're going to be the facilitators. They're going to be the ones setting up the offense. Kemba's going to take the ball out of his hands. Kemba's going to take some of those game-winning shots. He'll never be the hero that he was last year.
So let's hear from Stephen A., who weighed in today. While on vacation, something that Alan Hahn hasn't done, by the way.
Is he up there with Bezos in a balloon, or is he up there with
I don't think he went and got the rocket with Bezos.
He got the money to get a seat.
Well, here he is with his thoughts on the Knicks' moves.
You look at Julius Randle, it's right about the number that he deserved. When you see some of these $200 million contracts and what have you, clearly he wasn't somebody that deserved that. When you talk about his four-year extension, obviously, for a max deal for him was around that number, anywhere from $110 to $120 million. I think it's about right. When you average 24-10, you're the most improved player in the world. You still got tremendous upside. You can invest that kind of money. It's close to $30 million a year. That's about right for him. And I think he deserves that. Plus, it still gives them some cap maneuverability. In the case of Kemba Walker, my question is only about his knees. It's not about his heart. It's not about his guts. And it's certainly not about his game. because when healthy, we know what he's capable of. We know what he's doing. When you couple all of that with the fact that he's a Bronx native and he'll be coming back home and he'll be highly motivated, that definitely is a plus for as well for the Knicks. And I think that they've upgraded at the guard position because you got him and you retained Derrick Rose and you still got Emmanuel Quickley. So I think you're really good at the point guard spot, assuming that both he and Derrick Rose can remain healthy. When you look at Fournier coming in, I'm not that high on Fournier. He's no scrub. I know he can play. I know he's good for 17 or 18 a night. I know he can hit a perimeter shot. He certainly can hit a three. And to get him at the number of $78 million, I certainly like that because, again, it wasn't an exorbitant amount of money when you consider the today's NBA economy, the cap space, et cetera, et cetera. So all those things being considered, I think we look at the Knicks right now, and although we view their ceiling as being something that's going to be approximately the Eastern Conference semifinals, at least they're not taking a step back. I'm happy about that, and we go from here.
So they have taken a step forward, mm-hmm. and you heard him say that he thinks this number is just about right for Randall. I'll ask you this, though. If Randall had played well in the postseason, would he have taken this deal?
No, and I don't think the Knicks would have offered this deal. I think it would have been a little bit more. I mean, you look at what
John Collins?
John Collins got, right? He's younger, and he got, basically $25 million a year. This is right on par with what they believe Randall is. They don't believe he's Trae Young because Trae Young got $217 million. They believe that he's somewhere like a second to third option, and that's pretty much what he proved to us that he was in the playoffs.
See, I get it. And if I'm Julius Randle,
he's 26. Like, he got a cash in the bag, man. Like, this contract takes him to 31.
Yes, and that's why I understand it to a degree from his standpoint, because there does come a point for certain guys when you're happy in a particular place. Randle and the city of New York seemed to embrace each other this past year once he became this player. And you've made $60 million already, so now you're tacking on another $140.
It's $200 million.
Yeah, it's $200 million. It's just the idea of they would have offered him more if he had another big year. Is he hurting himself? Like, is he costing himself money? And that makes me wonder about where he believes he is.
That pigs get slaughtered, right? If he believes that he's a great player, he cashes in this money and say, you know what, I'm getting paid under market. But guess what? If I ball out in this, I'm sure some options in it. I'm sure if he's balling, they might want to sign him to another extension to lock him in and make him a lifer. But, if you get hurt this season or you hurt your knee or something happens, we saw all these players get injured last year. We saw Boogie Cousins for years. He was supposed to get the bag, and just injury after injury, and you look up and he never got it. You saw the same thing happen to Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas, the year that his sister died, he put on a show. He was averaging damn near 27 points a game, was an MVP candidate. Now he struggles even to find his way on a roster, never got his bag, never got his $200 million. So Julius Randle was saying, let me secure my future. Let me get some longevity right here. I like being here. Let me play nice. And then if I ball out, by the time I'm 30 years old, and guys at 30 years old are getting paid now because Chris Paul made it so. So, hey, I'll cash out on my third contract. I mean, we're talking about Steph Curry, two contracts over $200 million. We're talking about Chris Paul's earned over $400 million in his career. The salary cap's only going to go up, so I'll get that bag later. But let me secure I got me a nice bag first.
888 say ESPN. Max is in Missouri up first today on ESPN Radio. Max, what's up, bud?
Yeah, I am really concerned about Ben Roethlisberger's health and durability. That being said, who do you want as the backup, Randolph or Haskins?
Well, we know what Randolph is, right? I mean, come on, man.
Like, not good is what he is.
Exactly. So, I mean, they took a low-risk flyer on Dwayne Haskins. He needs to mature a lot. That's his issue.
It's a good place for that to happen.
Yeah, his issue is the same as, to me, Jameis Winston, right? He needs to get matured. He needs to be humbled. And he needs to sit for a year and see how the pros do it. Being with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mike Tomlin, a no-nonsense guy, is exactly where he needs to be. But, off to a bad start. Wife knocked his tooth out. I don't know what the hell was going on there. But that's the type of things that we have to avoid. We have to see him become a professional. The year before, in the midst of a pandemic, having the strippers come to his hotel room. He's a bad decision maker, and we got to fix that. But at one point, Ben Roethlisberger was a bad decision maker, too.
Many times. Mason Rudolph is not the answer. Bill in the Bronx. Bill, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? It's Enzo from the Bronx, actually.
Oh, it's Enzo. What's going on?
I was calling because of Julius Randle's contract. I know you're worried about him not going for more money, but I really think that Randle might be doing a favor for the team. And being in New York, playing great, he's not going to be short of making money here, especially with big endorsements in this city with the Garden.
We're talking about $80 million. I mean, we are talking about $80 million. But, yes, look, I respect the fact if the guy's healthy here and he wants the security – I respect all of that. I do. It's just, it's not often that you see it in the NBA these days.
Yeah, but we
really,
yeah.
Not often that you see guys just really completely opt to pass on that kind of money.
Possibly, right? We've seen it happen, right? Like I told you, Boogie Cousins is the biggest example that Isaiah Thomas was one before that. But Boogie was supposed to be, before the game really changed to this stretch five, he was the dude. He was the dude that everybody's waiting for him to be ready to leave Sacramento. He did that. Hurt his knee, and never got his bread.
Chris Carlin, Bart Scott on ESPN Radio, brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Did Julius Randle do the right thing by taking this contract? What are your expectations on the Cowboys this year? And how concerned are you about Dak Prescott still not being back out on the field throwing until at least next week? The Steelers as well. And if Big Ben has enough left this year to do something, all of those on the table for you to hit us up on the calls at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Up next, major, major concern around one of the best players in all of Major League Baseball and his future. That in moments. Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bart and Hahn.
You're fired up about the Cowboys and the Steelers, that's for sure. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. It is the summer of Dash Pass, and members are getting $10 off groceries, alcohol, and pet food because summer! Try Dash Pass for free and get year-round savings. Exclusive menu items and zero delivery fees now in the DoorDash app. Terms and conditions apply. Chris Carlin, Bart Scott, ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Let's hit the calls and start with Kevin in Pennsylvania up first this segment on Bart and Hahn. Kevin, what's up, buddy?
Bart, thank God you're back. I need to wash my hands with the Cowboys. Dak's fourth quarter garbage time stats aren't enough to win. Weeks ago, Chris said I didn't need your permission to become a Jet fan, but please don't hit me, and please let me in.
Do you really want to do this to yourself?
Come over to the dark side, man. It's okay, man.
Okay, but just understand what you're stepping into. Now, I believe the Jets are on the right road. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, I'm a go-by-history guy, and there's been a lot of pain
history. But your twin...
Joe Douglas.
Yeah, your twin is now in charge. Your twin has been schooled in a proper manner, and he knows how to build a team. Now, he had him shake and bake Adam Gase, but, he got rid of him, hit him with a stiff arm, let him go. And now, finally, he has a coach that matches his attitude and his swagger and his energy that's going to bring energy into the building. And you heard Sal Powell the other day. He was giddy when he was talking about Zach Wilson.
Come on. There weren't even pads on yet.
But not so much even Zach Wilson. The fact that they're building a fortress in front of whoever's going to be the quarterback for the Jets. All they need is another right guard in this year's draft. When they come up and they're going to have two first-round draft picks, if they get a right guard to go with Vera Tucker, what if they get the mirror image of Vera Tucker on that side? So you got Vera Tucker and you got the number one guard in all of football right there. If you don't go get him in free agency or you don't go get him in the draft, and then you got Morgan Moses and Becton. That just sounds intimidating. Remember, do you ever remember the replacement players? Remember they had those two dudes that was the security guards? They worked great together.
Yep.
One was Big Worm and the other was the you going to eat your cornbread guy from life. That's what that's going to look like.
From Morgan, the movie The Replacements.
Yeah, Morgan Moses and Becton, that's what they represent to me.
Joe Douglas was in the movie The Replacements as an offensive lineman.
You know what I call that? Synergy.
Look, all I can tell you is this. If his skills as a general manager match his looks, we're in great shape.
Ah, okay, baby Buddha, go a little self-deprecation, a little something right there. You projecting, because if he's handsome, what does that say about you, Chris?
He's
handsome.
Striking, exactly. Anthony in South Carolina, what's up, Tony? What do you got for us today?
Hey guys, I want to talk about the Steelers. First, I'd like to agree with Mr. Can't Wait. I think that if the Steelers are doing this with the O-line, I think we should trust them. I know you won't because you're a go-by-history guy, but also I think Najee Harris, it's going to take a lot off of Big Ben. I think he's going to be fine.
Listen, I hope so.
I think it's safe to say I want people to know that when you are making your comments, you're making your comments as a Stiller fan, right? Because your favorite team is a Stiller. So you have scar tissue because you've been with the highest of highs with Ben and the lowest of lows with Ben. So you're somewhere in the middle because you've seen bad Ben. You see a trend.
I've seen bad Ben, and I understand what they're doing with the offensive line. I'm not doing this from a strictly fan perspective. I'm locked in on those games, and I'm watching what I'm watching, and I can't understand. And you're right. Maybe I should trust it better because I know on the defensive side, whenever it's a linebacker or somebody like that, they get replaced like that without a problem.
Yeah, inside linebacker, outside linebacker.
And they have always been, I would say 80% of the time, right about when to move on from a player. Right.
They usually move on slightly a year early before a year late.
I just hate the idea that you're starting a rookie right in there. This guy who's a third-round pick. We'll see.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What round was Willie Colon drafted in?
Hofstra? I understand.
You're supposed to know your Stiller facts.
Was Willie a seventh-round pick? Or is he a fourth?
If that.
Round? Yeah. I think he was like six or seven.
Where was Kiamatu? Bro,
I understand.
The Steelers, that's what they do, man. They do that. And I hate to say it because you know I hate them.
I know you do. Then we shift over to some baseball for a moment because Jacob DeGrom, it does not sound like
we need to send him to Wakanda.
They're feeling particularly good about his situation with the Mets. I mean, Bart, it's amazing that the kind of season that
he
was
it.
Having.
We said it.
Yes. But
he's throwing too damn hard. Why are you throwing? Oh, we was talking about it in spring training. Oh, he's throwing 100 miles an hour. That's the same stuff we used to say about Syndergaard.
Well, and Syndergaard has been out for 2 years now. So you asked Buster Olney this morning on KJZ what the Mets' level of concern is when it comes to DeGrom.
Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, my concern about DeGrom is a 10. And I say this all the time. Teams are not obligated to tell us exactly what's going on with the player's injury situation. The player's not obligated to tell us. I always go back in his situation to what, you know, I've been told by many surgeons who perform Tommy John surgery. Look, if a guy has Tommy John, typically there's a period of about 7 years, and then the tread starts to go off the tire on that procedure. Well, he had his procedure in 2010. That's 11 years ago. And earlier this year, he was throwing harder than any starting pitcher in the history of baseball. And you wonder if, you know, that situation is behind all of these stops and starts.
Look, I think all of the issues that he's had, as Buster just alluded to, can't make me think he's coming back this year. We're talking about September. That's another month out. And you're talking, it's one of the best pitchers in baseball, if not the best, when he is on.
Can he take something off? We watched Tanaka have the UCL injury seem like it was going to tear it any time. Can he take it off? Can he take some off
and
rehab and change the way that he pitches? I mean, we talk about we can't be without Syndergaard and him. But could you imagine what a lift and a boost it would be if you get Syndergaard back healthy in September and if you get DeGrom back semi-healthy in September, what the outlook would be because Stroman would be your third pitcher.
But when I hear that from Buster, and it's 11 years now removed from getting Tommy John surgery, and all those things, like what did I ask you this about being an athlete? And when you have all of these little things go wrong, is your body trying to tell you something? And I think your body is trying to tell him something.
And I think it's more about the sticky stuff. And I'm not saying that he...
I don't think that's it with him.
No. What I'm saying is I didn't say that he relied on the
sticky
stuff.
No, I know what you're saying.
But he might have relied on some of it, right? We're not going to say that if this was something that was commonly practiced in all of baseball, he didn't use anything, right? He used something. And the fact that he's having to grip the ball a little different and still throwing as hard as he's ever thrown or as hard as anybody's ever thrown, it was only a matter of time before he was going to have something in that forearm because he was maybe gripping the ball a little harder. So this is what this goes back. And listen, Glasnow can't be wrong. Like whenever you have to grip something or hold something a little different, it starts working, stabilizing muscles a little differently. So I'm not saying that he needs the sticky stuff because we watched Serger the other night, you know, yesterday have a great performance, and he complained about, you know, putting in sticky stuff in his head. But some guys don't need it, but it doesn't mean that it's not going to wear you down.
Well, the other troubling aspect of this is how the Mets approach the deadline, and you're going to want to hear why they didn't pursue a starting pitcher. You're going to in just moments. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Chris Carlin, Bart Scott on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance with insurance for cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. You'll hear the reason why the Mets didn't go after a starting pitcher very hard at the deadline next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Bart and Han.
This is, maybe it's just me, it's a little more bothersome that the Mets didn't actually do something for a starter at the deadline, considering where they were with DeGrom. It's Bart and Han on ESPN Radio, coming to you live from above the Heineken River deck at Pier 17. And in this breaking moves, it's more about the moves the Mets didn't make by not going and getting a starter. Here is Buster Olney yesterday. He was on the Michael Kay Show on 98.7 in New York. And Buster is discussing the idea of the Mets not pursuing a starting pitcher right around the deadline and the reason as to why they didn't.
First off, as you know, the starting pitching market was relatively mediocre, right? You know, Jose Barrios was out there. He wound up getting traded to the Blue Jays. He was probably the best available guy. Kyle Gibson was probably the second best available guy. It wasn't a class, you know, that overwhelmed you. Max Scherzer sort of developed late. We know that Max wasn't going to accept a deal for the Mets. I will tell you this, that from what I understand, and I've heard this from a couple sources now, the Mets were working on a lot of different things that were more aggressive than what they wound up with. They got word about Jacob DeGrom that you know he was going to be out for an extended period of time, and the Mets basically backed off some of those conversations they were having. You know, maybe there was a feeling of, boy, if we don't know what's going to happen with DeGrom, we don't want to pour a bunch of assets down the, you know, the whole of 2021, but they actually backed off some conversations. I wish I could tell you exactly what those were for, but I've heard that from a couple of different sources.
You know, there are two ways to look at this. Okay. One is, all right, if you're not going to have DeGrom, you're not going to win a championship anyway. So why are we going to empty out our farm system? And he did go for two high level prospects. Barrios did. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah.
But for me, if your information at the time is that DeGrom is out until at least September and you think that you're not going to get him back at all, but you're in first place in a bad division, it's okay to once in a while overpay. And for me, I don't want to – when you come out and say, Bart, that after they got Baez, we had to prove to our team that we thought they were worth, you know, investing in and all that. But then the truth is maybe you punted on the season by not getting a starter?
Yeah.
That's garbage to me.
Yes, it's sending mixed messages, right? Because
yes.
At one end, it's like, oh, we went and got a hitter, somebody that can help us put up some points. And he's been, as advertised, I think he hit his second home run yesterday. I think that slide towards home base, you know, was amazing. The fact that he was able to contort his body and move the left hand out the way and be able to get the home run, I mean, get the score. But it's some of those things like where they don't tell, like sometimes as parents, we don't tell our children really what's going on.
Yeah.
Because we don't want them to have to deal with the bad news and we don't have all the information right now. I think as they're getting more information, they're going to get a realistic timetable. And I think they're optimistic, but I think they may know something that we may not know, and they're not willing to divulge to, one, their competition, their opponents. But they don't
want to. Well, that's why they held on to it until after the deadline.
Yeah, they don't want to even reveal it to them because they're hoping that maybe he can get back. But I think maybe the odds are probably 60-40 that he may not see him, that you may have to shut him down, especially if they start to lose a lot of games. And, you know, it goes in the other direction.
They had the dreaded team meeting yesterday. Mm-hmm. Bart, I mean, like, think about that. Of the pantheon of cliche things a team can do when they're losing, the team meeting,
it's the worst.
Somebody getting a vote of confidence.
It's team meetings is a total, especially the players-only meetings.
Yeah.
Total waste of time.
This one was not players only. Luis Rojas was the only one who spoke.
Okay, so maybe he was sitting there letting the guys know, like, what's going on and what's the realistic update on Jacob deGrom. Because I hate those meetings because all it turns into either like guys pointing the finger at themselves and not realize that they're being or at you and not pointing the thumb back at themselves and finding reasons why things aren't going the way they go, or guys end up fighting in there, you know, yelling at each other and nobody gets a concise thought out.
Have you ever been in a team meeting that was productive?
No.
Not once?
Not once.
Wow. Wow.
It's like a players only meet or a team meeting?
Doesn't matter. Like, meaning things are not going right for the team, whether it's a players only or a coach's meeting or a coach holds the meeting, whatever it is, it's when things are not going well.
The best one was the Rex buried a ball after the 49ers.
The 45-3 against the Pats.
Yeah, the 45-3 against the Pats. But we didn't need him to bury the ball for us to flush that turd. We knew we didn't want to watch that film anyway.
Yeah. Well, they did respond with a win last night, and Baez was a big part of it, but they just don't have the pitching at this point to get home. It's very clear to me, even though the rest of the division hasn't been very good. More on the offseason in the NBA. Free agency next, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN Plus. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.